All right, welcome to Off Track Racing Show. My name is Tristan Merrick, and we're here on Monday, and it's right after the first Enduro World Series round. I'm joined in studio right now with Jeremiah Bubar. Jeremiah, thanks for joining us today.
Oh, you're very welcome.
And joining us online right now, his time is limited. We've got Seb Kemp all the way from down in the desert of Sedona. Seb, how are things going on down there?
How you doing? You might be able to hear me through the vortexes.
Through the vortex of internet. The power of internet. We are recording you right now, multi-directional through the internet. So, Seb, you're down there. We've got only about 5 minutes with you. What do we want to talk about right away?
Well, the results, I think, is pretty much it came down to what a lot of people expected. There might be a few surprise, not necessarily results, but is failings. That might be too strong a word, but there's some people down the result sheet that I think should have, or we expect to be in higher. Part of that, I think, is down to the amount of people that didn't finish due to mechanicals or crashing or injuries. Biggest one of those would be Anne-Caroline Chazon. She didn't even finish the race, which means she must have had a real dinger in there. I had her tipped for first place. Nico Vulios was down there due to a puncture, and Nico Lau as well. He had some mechanicals and some crashes, which put him down the standings. So it goes to show you've really got to look after your equipment and your body through that entire race, eh?
Yeah, very, very much so. It's we talked about it quite a bit in that pre-race podcast. It's we're now on the main stage, and the pressure is on these guys, and it's the three very heavy favorites in that title right away. Round one already had a huge mishap. I mean, Jeremiah, what's your take on what took place with these guys? Pushing too hard or just luck in general?
Pushing too hard, without question.
Yeah.
I think these guys were really fired up heading into this event, and people have been talking about this for months now, and focused all off season, really looking to kind of step up their game in the off season. So I think everybody knew that they'd show up to this first event and have to just push a lot harder, a lot closer to a World Cup downhill speed, really. And then people are taking some risks with some equipment choices as well.
Yeah.
And so I think we saw a little bit of injury. I guess Ann Carroll broke some ribs.
Yeah.
I read somewhere.
Yeah, she broke some ribs, still managed to limp out of the stage, but for her to pull the pin on that first one, that's saying a lot right there. I think dug herself already into a hole. I mean, it is a 7-race series, but a lot of these guys are already behind the 8-ball right away. I mean, Seb, are these title contenders, are they going to be able to crawl back out of this hole? Like, is 7-race series enough to get out of that?
I think we're going to see Anne Caroline come back even fiercer than ever. It's not long until the next race. I'm sure she's going to battle through some broken ribs, so no matter how painful that is. All props, though, to Tracy Mosley for her win. I think it was great seeing a competitor like her take the win, and especially the way she did it as well. With the practice, there was an interview up on Vital MTB done by Sven Martin, and she talks about how a lot of the competitors were practicing before the event by being shuttled to all the stages, where she chose to just ride the bike she was going to race on for the practice. It means you only got two runs on a lot of the courses, on all the courses, but it was a more pure form of what they're trying to do. And I give her big, big, big props for doing that. And I think in the future races, we're probably going to see the authorities stamp down on shuttling, because shuttling, that's a free rider's game.
That's kind of interesting, because in the as part of the advisory board for the Enduro World Series, both Jerome and Tracy are also on the advisory board, and so right as they announced the courses for Punta Ala, those two got fired up about the fact that the amount of shuttling that was already occurring, the impact it's having locally to, people were even talking about using quads to shuttle up trails so they didn't have to pedal. And these guys are like, this is not the spirit of what this event should be. But on the flip side, you've got the promoters who are leveraging tourism. And they're trying to get people to stay at these places as long as possible. So by offering the training early, the local people are making more money. And so it's a little bit of a balancing act there, I think.
Yeah, very, very interesting to see how it'll start playing out in the next round. If they're going to limit that stuff, they're going to put a stamp on it, like you said, Seb, and going.
It's a big, big point Bubar, sorry to interrupt, there's a big point Bubar made there is about impact to the trails. This is one very distinct difference between World Cup cross country and downhill and other formats of racing is the trails that they're racing on are just open trails. They're the trails that recreational mountain bikers go out and use day in, day out. At a World Cup downhill, the tracks are specifically built almost for that one event that year. And if they get trashed and destroyed, it doesn't cause an impact to the mountain bike community. So I think it's really important that we're not seeing these trails get impacted negatively in the enduro format.
Yeah, and you know, I'm in line with Tracy and Jerome that I'd really like to see the training limited. I don't want this to turn into a mountain bike World Cup again. Like, I want that spirit and feel to be maintained. I think that's a critical piece to the puzzle, and part of the fun of the enduro racing is, you know, not just the pro aspect, but it's the participants as well. And so having the ability to go out there and do it and experience the race like the pros do, but not having to spend a whole week there as an amateur, just so you can be competitive, that's not what we want. We want people to roll in, have a great time for, you know, a long weekend.
Yeah.
I think it's hashtag pure Duro is what Ashmith of Maverick Trans Provence has been promoting this week. the other thing I think was quite interesting as well is I know it's an old, tired, dead horse that doesn't need flogging anymore, but wheels are pretty interesting this weekend. I think on the whole it goes to show that it doesn't matter what wheels you're riding, it's not going to make a huge difference to you.
No, well, I mean, the top placing 29er was Brian Lopes, and he was back in 15th, right? So
I like how you say back in 15th, like he's some kind of slouch.
No, he's no 15th.
Come on. Like, that's still a very, you know,
very respectable. Very respectable.
Blazing speed.
Yeah.
To us mortals.
Especially he was riding a 120 mil rear travel Ibis Ripley as well.
Yeah.
Not necessarily the bike that I think most people would have chose, but it was interesting watching his little Dirt TV interview with Steve Jones. And when Steve Jones asked him why he was running that particular bike, he said, I'm not here to race. I'm here to promote this new bicycle that came out. And Steve Jones quite rightly called him out saying, come on, like, you're always going to want to win, aren't you? And he kind of laughed that off. But, I mean, Tracy Mosley, she won on a 29er, yep. On a quite unique 29er that I don't think a lot of people were expecting.
Well, it's brand new to the
Remedy 29er. Yeah. But a lot of the guys in the guys category, it was mixed between 650B and 26. Fabien Borel winning on a 650B. But is it going to make that much difference? In one of the interviews, same one, Dirt TV with Steve Jones, Nico Vujos, when asked what the time advantage of running 650B over 26, he said it is 1 second over 3 minutes, which is a lot for enduro racing when you've got a 6 or 9 minute course and things are so tight. But it's interesting what that's going to mean on a larger scale for non-racers.
Yeah, very, very much so. You know, I think the whole wheel debate's more of an internet debate than an actual rider debate. I mean, a lot of them are riding what they feel comfortable with. A lot of them had multiple bikes there. I mean, there was still, everybody has stopped talking about a 26-inch wheel bike. There's nothing really new coming out in the future, but, you know, second to fourth was still on a regular 26-inch wheel bike, you know, and there is lots of talk about tires and your setup. You run, you know, a 160 mil bike, you're running a 120, 140. A lot of guys are saying 140 was the ultimate. You know, is it these guys have to have two or three bikes at each round, do you think, Seb? Or is just one bike and just run what you brung going to be the motto for the rest of the series?
Personally, I think that we're probably going to see a bit of settling from that. I think for the first race, a lot of riders are kind of new to the format. Also, I think a lot of people not necessarily knowing how they've got to approach the race. Hence a bit of questioning and double guessing. But I think it's probably going to settle down a bit, and you're going to see the same riders on the same bikes week in, week out. I don't think we're going to see too many riders turning up with two or three bikes.
I'd agree with that statement. The one thing I would say, though, is knowing all the development that's occurring, I would anticipate people going to larger wheels as the season progresses, as new frames come out from each manufacturer.
Are we going to see a lot of these riders? I mean, Jeremy, do you think we see a lot of these riders testing prototype bikes throughout the rest of the season? Are we going to see production bikes underneath them? Or are we going to start seeing one-off geometry sets as we go forward?
I know we're going to start seeing production bikes underneath them. I'm not aware of anyone at this point saying, you know, getting ready to tweak geometries, that kind of thing. I would anticipate we wouldn't see much of that until next year. I think a lot of the people right now are the manufacturers are, you know, finishing development of these new bikes. And so that's going to be their focus, is getting to the finish line with that. And then heading into next year, I think you're going to see a lot of just refinement going on. So there'd be opportunity there. But we don't see a ton of custom geometry done anymore.
No, no.
It's a little bit harder because everyone wants plastic bikes, and a lot harder to make a custom plastic bike.
Yeah, I mean,
sorry to interrupt, guys. I've got to go and run and have my pink Jeep Vortex tour. I can see my group heading out now. But have fun with the rest of the podcast, and have a great day.
Enjoy your second trip to Sedona.
Thanks, Booba. Have a great day.
Thanks for your time, Seb. Take
see
it easy.
You, Seb.
Bye.
There, are we going to see quite a shift in the podium?
Didn't Curtis podium at the Super Enduro finale?
He did do that. He did. I mean, that was a statement. But we don't really have a blueprint for this, right? It's the first year. We don't have any history to go off of. So, do you think we're going to see a podium shuffle at each round with each? You know, when we go from Europe to North America, or are things going to kind of stay very much the same?
When we come to North America, it's going to be different because the two North American stops are very bike park.
Yeah.
So it's a very different feel to the trails. It's a slightly different skill set. You know, the top guys are the top guys, but I think you're going to see definitely some major shuffles in, you know, 10 through 20.
Yeah.
That zone, you're going to see a lot of people moving around where North Americans will come up.
Yeah.
Just because it's used... the style of riding that we're a bit more used to here, and kind of not as common over in Europe. So I think we are going to see a little bit of a shuffle. But I still want to talk about Graves. That was my big surprise, and I don't see a lot of people jumping up and down about that.
No, yeah, Jared Graves coming in third place, and you know this guy's going to need, he's probably the most, I'm going to put out there, the most talented bike handler out there. We got BMX, we got four cross, we got him at downhill, and he's excelled on the highest level of all those, now taking his hand at Enduro, and coming in at third place, very openly saying he's needed to lose a lot of weight. You know, he did some Enduros last year, but he was beefed right up, you know.
Holy,
he was full cross, you know, powerhouse. He was a Clydesdale, and to now switch things over, and to come in third place and only 15 seconds back from Fabian, which is, you know, I think that's a testament just how talented he is. And when he puts his mind to something, he's going for it. And, you know, didn't crack under pressure. And I mean, what do we say about this guy? What don't we say about him?
The big thing is he is an insanely focused individual.
Yeah.
So, like, when he really kind of puts his head down, it's pretty nuts. Like, when I ran into him last year, I could not believe how thick he was.
Yeah.
Like that wattage cottage, he'd been spending some time in the gym doing squats. Like,
yeah.
With this giant power booty on him. And that's the first thing I was thinking when I saw the result. I'm like, I have not spoken with him this year, so I haven't seen him. So I was like, whoa, he must have had to lean out because he was thick. And to be able to, like, from what I heard from Duncan Riffle, it was a hard course. Like, it took you all day to get around Punta Ala, and you were going to be real tired just from getting around it, let alone racing each stage. And then, you know, to have Graves there, who's not been, you know, doing events that are particularly long.
No, you know, he's a quarter mile sprinter, and now it's, you've got 6 hours of saddle time, plus, you know, you get to each start gate, which there was five stages. There was supposed to be six. The second stage was canceled on the Sunday there. To just get around takes a huge effort. It takes a lot of energy out of you. Then you're going full max heart rate. You're in full race mode. And it sounds like each stage had a good minute and a half climb in it, where guys were saying they were having to get off and push their bikes up and run. I mean, Graves, in interviews, he'd said that he'd been pretty much on his road bike the entire winter just to lose that poundage that he'd put on. I think he'd gone from 90-something kgs back down to low 80s. You know, that's quite a body transformation in the season where a lot of guys are just worried about, you know, their bike setup and being fit. This guy totally changed his body all while training and, you know, trying to stay in shape. So
he didn't even have to get cancer to do it.
Oh, fair enough, fair enough. I mean, yeah, we've touched on Barelk in first. I mean, Jerome second.
I was gonna, he's one of our boys, so we would peg him for the win there heading into the weekend.
Yeah,
you know, obviously with Fabian on my mind, being that he had just come out of the SRAM Specialized Enduro at Garda.
Yeah.
And won that one.
Yeah,
but I was hoping that our boy Jerome could do it, but. Yeah, I mean, Jerome's going to be there every single weekend.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a massive talent.
Yeah.
But he's not a massive human. He's tiny.
No, that blew me away last year meeting him at Crankworks. And, you know, racing here, there's this guy. And he's not this huge powerhouse. He's not all muscle. He's not a tall character. But was, you know, fortunate enough to ride with him after the race during the week. And this guy just slices the trail apart. And... you know, a little pedal stroke here and there, and he just generates speed where, you know, on trails where I ride on a regular basis in the bike park, generates speed and just disappeared. And that's what probably blew my mind most, is just how skillful he was and how he reads the terrain. You know, he wasn't just putting in pedal strokes and hammering his way down there. So no surprise to see him in second.
No, no, and I'll be utterly shocked if he doesn't win a few of these.
No, not at all. I mean, I think already we're going to see him and Burrell battling probably right to the end, very much trading wins and probably going down the wire, which is exciting. You know, we're at round one's happen, and it's, you know, we're hoping that nobody just clearly walks away with it. I think that'll make for some dull racing, and as far as the points chase at the end of the year for the overall winner. But I guess I have a suspension question for you. Jerome, there's an interview online the other day saying, he doesn't do any travel adjust or anything like that. You work quite heavily, obviously, being the RockShox, you know, product manager. What's your take? Is that just, that's how he likes to ride his bike? He doesn't want to, you know, change it up where he can dial down the travel between stages. He says, I leave the fork where it's at 150, and I'll lock out the rear shock between stages. Where a lot of the consumers are just wanting every dial possible to change everything on their bike.
Yeah, I think, you know, given the nature of this event in particular, you know, these guys aren't rushed to get from through the liaisons.
Yeah.
Like, they are incredibly fit, so they can go pretty cruisy. And so they don't have to look for the performance advantages on the climbs.
Yeah.
Necessarily. And you also have to remember, these guys are insanely strong, so it's not a big deal for them to kind of stand up and get over the front end of the bike, where someone like myself is like, I just kind of need to sit down and grind this one out, and like, I'm going to drop it down 30 mils, get my weight a little further forward, and just putter up to the top there. So definitely, like, if I'm personally building an enduro race bike, I wouldn't have a travel feature on it.
Yeah.
But like my personal bike that I ride on all the time does have that on it, just because...
Yeah.
You know, you're out there with your friends, you're doing a super long day, and you're just like, I got to grind up this hill. I'm going to just make it a little easier on myself.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, fair enough. I mean, it's good to hear your take on that.
And it's, you know, it's a little bit of weight. We're talking like 50 to 150 grams, depending on the system that you've got.
And do we think that's a huge, you know, overall bike weight? Is there a cap, like, you know, do we think in the future with Enduro there will be a cap where your bike has to weigh a minimum amount? You know, guys aren't going too overboard, whereas in other sports like motocross and, you know, Formula One, where it's gotten to the extent where engineers are able to produce such a light product, then it's unfair. Or do we see a cap coming at some point, do we think, or is it too early to tell that kind of...
Well, at this point, luckily the UCI is not involved. So we don't have a cap.
Yeah.
They have it on road bikes, as you know. But I don't foresee it on the mountain bike side of things. Things haven't ended up getting too out of hand.
Yeah.
One thing that we've always argued with the UCI as an industry is that that's one of the allures of mountain biking is the technology aspect of it. So don't hinder us too far there. So I don't see us hitting a weight cap anytime soon. You know, I don't predict that we're going to have the ability to have $20,000 enduro bikes out there where Fabian Burrell and a couple other guys are untouchable purely because of the expense that their sponsors paid.
So. Yeah. Okay. No factory support in that crazy level. That's
I think we're going to need some real spendy outside sponsors before we get there.
I
hope they're all listening and want to spend money with the mountain bike industry.
And that I guess is another point. Do we think that with it being a new sport, we've seen a lot of sponsors jump in, especially in the energy drink level. We know the riders probably aren't drinking that stuff, but it's good for our sport. Do we see, because enduro is a new sport, is there going to be a way to market this to the outside world? Is there going to be a way to bring in external sponsorship dollars, or is this just going to fall in line with the rest of the mountain bike kind of community, and we're not the same companies that are supporting us now are going to support us, continue to support it?
I think the challenge with enduro is that it's difficult to explain.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if you've ever tried to talk to your mom about it. You got your grandparents coming in.
Yeah, that's true.
So maybe try to explain it to them, but it's not very translatable to most people. No. Like, as mountain bikers, we get it.
Yeah.
Right? It's like doing some big ride with your friends and then at the top just saying, hey, let's time each other coming down, and then compare notes at the bottom. So we get that inherently based upon doing the sport, but it's hard. I think it's a little bit difficult to explain.
Yeah.
I think the opportunity lies in the participants.
Yeah.
You know, is that this isn't like cross country racing. It isn't like downhill racing. You know, you can just go and do one of these for fun.
Yeah.
Right? You don't have to be, you know, killing yourself, risking your life, but you can go out there with 5 or 10 of your friends and have the best day ever.
Yeah.
And it's basically like going to some place and getting a personal guide on the best downhills in the whole area and getting to do them all back to back. And so I think the participation in mountain bikers could help us grow this sport. We could get a lot more mountain bikers participating in this style event or in these individual events and really grow it that way. And then outside sponsors will see the opportunity to market to us mountain bikers. But I think it's a hard one to translate outside. Just like if you look at motorcycle enduro stuff, it doesn't translate as well as supercross or motocross.
Yeah, unless you put it in a stadium and you can sell them beer and have fireworks and everything else. It's just, a lot of guys, people go see motocross because they probably want to see somebody wreck or do some big jumps, I guess that's the nice thing about our sport. We don't just fit in a box, we're out and it's the riders who are there. It's part of the adventure for them. And I agree wholeheartedly with that.
Oh, you want to race, huh?
Welcome back to the Off Track Podcast.
Yeah, I guess another surprise for me is the fourth place finisher, Martin Haas, 16 years old.
Yeah, I do not know much about this kid.
Yeah.
I was just reading on the internet, some very excited other people that he wore flats in the prologue, riding a 26-inch, but being 16 years old, like, that kid's got quite a future, and he has to have some insane horsepower.
Yeah, I mean, this is a guy who beat his teammate Dan Atherton and Ben Cruz and all these other guys that have finished behind him, and to be 16, I haven't seen any pictures, I'm guessing he's one of those man-child kids that are, you look at him, you think he's probably about 24, 25, because of his size, he's generating some serious horsepower, so there was a bit of a gap between, third and fourth. That's where there was 15 plus seconds. So for him, again, 34 seconds back, that's impressive. And then Dan Atherton in fifth, he's got to be happy to be top five, he's safe first round, he's in the points.
Yep.
And then the day your 16-year-old teammate beat you, Dan's a pretty serious guy. That's got to be motivation for him for the next round.
Without question, it's motivating. But, you know, in the few interviews I've read, like, Dan's had nothing but great things to say about his teammates. So I think more than anything, he's probably really happy to see how well his young teammates doing out there.
Yeah. I mean, I think the way they're staged, like, is it a good thing? Because I saw that both there's two riders started out at a time from the stage, and it kind of was a group mentality. Is it possible that they get linked up as teammates where they can just ride together? Like, maybe you can explain a little bit more. Do we
you know, like Enrico and those promoters, they're smart guys, right?
Yeah.
And so I was kind of looking at the pairings, and it looked like they were pairing a lot of people based upon what would make a great stage interview right before the people headed out, and what would be great, you know, photography out there.
Yeah.
And so it is, there isn't a format at this point as to who starts where and why.
Yeah.
I think that's something that I'm sure we'll discuss with Chris and the Enduro World Series crew.
Yeah.
Heading into next year a little bit. But right now, you know, Enrico from Super Enduro, he knows how to put on a great show. Very entertaining, you know, for him, keeping, like, people who are in the paddock really involved. And so at this point, I say let him do that and just set it up for what makes for interesting.
Well, you got Petey and Julio starting, you know, pedaling out together. I mean, that's...
like, how is that not planned? Right, like that wasn't picked out of a hat.
Yeah, let's just do some random number pairings here. And, funny enough, it's you two.
Yeah, the two winningest downhill racers of all time in terms of World Cup wins.
Yeah, I'm sure the conversations those guys had. I mean, the amount of world champions. I mean, there was, what do I got here? We had 14 different world champions riding this. I mean, this is the you know, not to say the hype before this, but the talented riders, everybody was there. From the downhill guys to the XC guys to four cross to everything, to have that many legends and future legends on the starting gate is, I mean, how can you not call that a success to begin with this new series? And Chris has started. I mean, he's got to feel pretty darn good about himself and what he's created with who he's partnered with all the series going forward.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's a pretty winning formula, right? You know, Chris has aligned himself with some of the most successful events out there and successful promoters out there, which I think is a fantastic way to do it, because you get to kind of pick some of the best things out there. But my question to you is, all right, so we had, you know, arguably a big pile of the greatest mountain bikers who are still riding mountain bikes. Why did they all show up? What's the allure?
I mean, the allure is exactly what mountain biking is, and the way the format is, you get to go ride with your friends. You're cruising up and down the hills, and you get to race at the end of the day. And I think it was a kind of the race environment play to see kind of who is that better bike handler when it comes to that. But I just think the environment that has been created for them, it's a race, but you get to relax and hang out and you know, shoot the shit with the guys between stages. Like you said, they're very fit. They probably weren't very rushed. You know, the one enduro I did that I've done was Crankworx last year. To say that was rushed is an understatement. I think that was, you know, an all-out sprint for about the first three stages. As you raced that last year to yourself, I mean, that was, you know, we were definitely pressed for time. But to see everybody come out there, I mean, I personally think it's just the environment to hang out, to be part of the sport, to you know, Seb and I talked about it on our pre-race podcast, which is the more these guys buy into it and the more they promote the sport, the more it's going to grow and the more success that we're going to see on the world stage with it, you know. I love the fact that there's seven rounds. I mean, that's more rounds than the UCI World Cup downhill.
Yeah.
You know, do we see more rounds getting added in the future, do you think? Or do we have a cap where it's a control environment and guys can still then go do all these other things where,
That's an active discussion within the Enduro World Series crew right now. You know, whether, you know, how many races we go to, you know, one of the things that we don't want to do is turn this into something where people can't afford to get to all the rounds. I think some of us feel that it's very Eurocentric at the moment, and there's some opportunities to get to some other markets that we'd like to do, but really going, you know, I could see 10 rounds max.
Yeah.
At some point. I don't know how fast we want to get there. The other thing is we want to be really conscious about growing this as a quality product.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it's so hot right now. You know, people are pushing Chris to make it much bigger, and yeah. I think he's doing a great job of just going like, okay, this is year one. Let's do this right. Let's do it well, and let's, you know, set ourselves up and not grow too fast. And so I think we'll see some more rounds added, and hopefully we'll be going to some other markets. You know?
Yeah.
You know, we've talked about Asia, we talked about South America, and as being some other larger markets. The discussion in Eastern Europe as well, because that's an emerging market, and so hopefully we'll see a little bit more world travel, but hopefully not too much to keep a lot of the athletes from being able to afford the travel.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we expand to different markets, but if the support isn't there, then riders can't afford to do it, and then it hurts the product at the end of the day.
But by the same token, let's just say we go to Brazil and Brazil falls in love with enduro, and then there's Brazilian money coming into the sport and sponsors, and they think it's the coolest thing ever.
Yeah,
so there's where, you know, the opportunity lies, of course, is that, you know, we're investing in a market that potentially could get really excited about the sport.
No, I agree with that. I mean, you look at Formula One racing and how global that is within the last few years. You know, they used to go to these niche markets once in a while, and now it's, you know, they're racing all over. They're going to every corner of the globe because, you know, they've done an event there, and they've bought into it. They've been smart. They've done their research, and I think Chris is going to do his research. He's going to know exactly what he wants and where he wants to go, and it's exciting because, you know, like you said, it's hot right now. You look in the West Coast of America. There's Oregon Series. There's, you know, the SoCal Series, NorCal Series. Like, there's so many different enduro series. Do we think those are going to maybe peter out because there's too much racing and it's pulling the race, you know, those regional racers in too many different directions?
Yeah, I think, you know, like I said, it's really hot and everybody wants to do an enduro. And, you know, to be honest, in the U.S., it's hard to get into one right now.
Yeah.
Like, we had both the Big Mountain Enduro Series and the Nate Series, the National Enduro Series. And, like, those things sold out, like...
Yeah.
Incredibly quick, so you can't even get into any of them, and that was like this winter.
Yeah.
So like, if you're like just kind of like, I don't know if I want to do one. Now you're like, hey, I totally want to try one. I'm trying to find an event right now, it's hard. But I think it's gonna settle down a little bit.
Yeah.
People are gonna start to pick and choose the ones that they really enjoy and they really like doing, and kind of do repeats on those ones or the ones that are closer. But I think, you know, it's going to come at the sacrifice of cross-country racing a bit. Definitely in North America, where promoters are switching over to promoting this format over a cross-country race.
Yeah, I mean, I guess we've seen it on decline over the last few years with XC and the amount that goes on. Here's a hypothetical question. Does enduro possibly take an Olympic, you know, does it become an Olympic event before downhill becomes an Olympic event?
I don't think either of them will become Olympic events.
I don't want either of them to, but I was just curious, you know, like, does it get big enough where all of a sudden XC gets the can and enduro could come in?
It's potential, except for the UCI. Like, it's, I don't know, enduro is just too far away from road racing, and UCI is kind of squished cross country into kind of that format. So I just don't see it.
Yeah.
But if I had my wishes, the IOC would fire the UCI and start over again, and then we could actually have a governing body that cares about mountain biking.
Very well said. I think there's a lot of people who feel the exact same as you with that. It's hard to see the sport of downhill kind of get driven into the ground, and just all the stuff that went on before this enduro season and race season kicked off right before Sea Otter with the UCI kind of trying to pull that card out, limiting only if you have a UCI license, you can only race UCI events. And then you have to, you know, for all these events that happen, such as Crankworks and all these other things, either you have to buy into the UCI and you lose control of what you've created, or you lose the top athletes, you know?
Yeah, I mean, And that comes on the heels of a release that they put out in, what, December?
Yeah.
Where they said, we support Enduro, but we don't want to step on the toes of Enduro World Series. Something very specific like that. And it was a really short release, and it was kind of like a little feel-good statement. And I was like, oh, that's nice. The UCI's kind of got the olive branch out, and they're saying, hey, Chris Paul's doing a great job over there. We want to get involved at some point, but blah, blah, blah. And then a couple of weeks later, you know, throwing down the hammer on that rule that they have is just like two big middle fingers at us.
It's sad, you know. It was interesting. There was definitely a lot of talk of what's going to happen, what's going to go on. And I mean, I would love to know what really happened at the end of the day, because they were sure playing hardball, and then all of a sudden on this European Enduro website, there's a press release saying, no, it's all good, we'll just leave it till next spring. It's kind of the drift I got from it. Like, you guys can do what you want this year. We'll deal with it next year.
Yeah. Well, you know, we'll see. It's going to be a horrible mess this winter, and I feel bad for Chris because he knows those guys real well from working with the UCI for so many years. So he's going to be pretty heavily involved in a lot of probably uncomfortable conversations. You know, the only good I see from being involved in the UCI is drug testing, because that's a real expense.
Yeah, very much so. We didn't get into that in our pre-race. I know Seb and I kind of joked about it briefly. There's already been that one French rider that was caught, whose name isn't out there in the media yet, but was caught in the offseason.
Oh, is he?
Well, you know, I guess you can search.
It's pretty common knowledge in the industry. I didn't know it wasn't common knowledge.
Well, you know, I guess I didn't see it. I know there was no, you know, press release about it, but just how the UCI wanted to protect this individual.
That's another just mismanagement of everything they do.
Yeah.
You know? Another example, you can't even find a calendar for this year's Downhill World Cup on the UCI website.
Yeah, I did see that the other day. I was putting some notes together for our pre-race downhill show in a couple weeks, and I'm like, why is it that I'm finding it on every other website other than the UCI website? So, that's... thank you, UCI, for doing that.
But we shall call him Mr. Viking.
Welcome back to the Off Track Podcast.
Let's move into, you know, we have a fan question that actually came through on Twitter yesterday. And maybe you can answer this. OG DH guys versus new school Enduro guys. Who will reign supreme at the end of the year?
Oof. At this point, I'm going to say the OG guys, because they're a bit wily, right? They've been around the world forever. They know how to race a World Cup Series, right? And so you can kind of think of this as a slightly condensed World Cup Series every weekend, because you're doing multiple runs, multiple courses, managing your equipment successfully.
Yeah.
You know, the whole thing where riders win races, mechanic win championships.
Yeah.
That kind of applies a bit with the equipment in Enduro. So I think this year we're going to see, if we're going to generalize, it's those downhill veterans are going to do that. They also just have so much time in their legs in terms of, you know, memorizing courses, knowing, you know, where to conserve, where to really lay it down.
Yeah.
But my hope is that next year we're going to see the rise of the Enduro specialist and have them really taking over, because, you know, riders like Jerome Clements and Cruz, who are like, that's their thing. That's always been their thing.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want those heroes of our sport really to kind of take off. And so this isn't just like, oh, this Enduro where retired downhillers go to die.
Yeah.
Like, I don't ever want it to turn into that.
No, we don't want it as the graveyard for, if you can't qualify for a World Cup, you just try your hand at Enduro, and you're all of a sudden a top five, you know, top 10 right contender each and every week.
But specifically, it's not like these guys are slouches, the ones like,
no,
we're not talking about guys who are failing to qualify for World Cups. We're talking about guys who are contenders.
Yeah. Very, very true. I mean, it's scary with, you know, from looking at what it takes to qualify for a downhill World Cup now. I mean, I think last year it was on average 25 seconds between first and 80th, and that's usually with first putting multiple seconds into second place. I mean, it's getting tighter and tighter. So, it's to see these guys transition over. It's cool. It's cool to see. I mean, Burrell deserves to win. I mean, that guy's definitely, it's amazing watching him ride a bike, and it's going to be exciting come, Crankworx, Whistler when they're here. Are you going to any of the, are you going to any of the rounds between here and Crankworx Whistler?
Yeah, at this point, I don't have travel booked, but I think I'm going to go over to European Crankworx, so yeah. Mountain of Hell. And then, I think...
Well, it's no longer Mountain of Hell, but it's like that 7-hour trying to decipher that the other day, but it's Crankworx France, which is the Enduro World Series, but I don't think Mountain of Hell is included into... It's not this, obviously not the same format, because that was kind of more of a mega style event, so, that's a whole other topic. I know lots of people are like, why is Mega Avalanche not included in the Enduro World Series and all this other stuff, but...
Yeah, so it's just Crankworx.
Les de Zelp.
Yeah, so I'll be heading over for that. Depending on my travel schedule, I'll probably go to Winter Park. It's only a 3-hour drive from the...
Are we going to see you racing in any of them?
I am not commenting on that one.
fair enough.
I don't want anyone looking out for me.
Maybe he will, maybe he won't. You did race Crankworx last year, and you came in with definitely a respectable sixth place. So, it was a fun event, that one. And I know...
With strep throat, by the way.
With strep throat. Yes, I remember you.
I was laid up. I was running a fever all day, which I didn't really... I just was like, God, I just feel bad today.
Yeah.
And then I was laid up the rest of the week in my hotel room.
That was... I remember seeing you a few times, and it was like, I don't even want to shake your hand. Mm-hmm. I think you should be in quarantine right now.
I did that shortly after.
Yeah, it's... Crankworx, it's cool to see all these events. I mean, as far as I know, they've almost all sold out. I know... With the Whistler one, everybody in Whistler relaxed. Nobody wants to sign up for anything until the last minute. And I know with the day registration went up. I haven't been inside scoop. I know, everybody who works at Crankworx, they're like, oh, no, we're like 3/4 of our way through our, allotted amount of spots. And it's put it out on Facebook to all my friends. Like, if you guys are going to race, you got to sign up now. And they're like, oh, I don't want to sign up now. It's so far away. And it's like, either sign up now. Or come cheer us on. Those are kind of your options. And I know there's a second round of registration happening on June 1st. But from what I've heard, there's less than 40 spots available when they're going to put that up. So, it's very, very encouraging to see. Punta Ala had 500 registered athletes.
Yeah.
And that's for these events companies. This is crazy to put on. You think of a 30-second interval start time. That's a lot between the first person and the last person to leave that gate at stage one. That's a lot of people.
Yeah. And I think this goes back to the earlier conversation with Seb was on.
Yeah.
We're putting 500 people down a trail in a day is a lot of wear and tear on a local trail that, probably was not purpose built.
Yeah.
And so I think that's something we need to keep tabs on, because we definitely don't want promoters getting themselves in trouble and getting us kicked out of areas, because we want to be able to continue to go to cooler and cooler riding spots.
Yeah.
And so I think that's just something as an industry we need to keep our tabs on.
Sustainability will probably be a big topic in the future, as far as this track is fun to race and it's fun to ride, but can we put down 500 people down it, multiple times throughout the weekend, like you said, with the shuttling and everything else that's been going on in these rounds? Is that going to, take a unique track and just turn it into a super highway? With guys being there days beforehand, they kick that rock out of the inside of the corner where they know they can, set up a little early and cut across,
Yeah. So. Like I was saying earlier, I'm not a big fan of the out there for a week ahead of time to do all the training.
Yeah.
It just doesn't feel like in the spirit of it.
Yeah.
For me, yeah. I want it to feel like you're going out for a trail ride with your friends. Maybe you rode the trail before, maybe you didn't.
Yeah.
And then just go out there and just see how well you do.
Yeah.
I know the first Super Enduro I ever did, I didn't understand the format. We just showed up late the night before, just pedaled up to the top of some hill, and then had no clue what to expect heading into it. And it was really exciting because of that. I didn't even know how long each stage was.
Yeah.
Like, I was like, oh, I could be in for a minute and a half. where this could be the 14-minute downhill that I get really tired of. Because I heard there's a long one out here somewhere.
Yeah.
And so it makes it really fun and exciting that way. And I think, you know, if you turn it into a World Cup downhill and you're just, you know, you're just knocking out laps and you got every route memorized, it just kind of takes away from the spirit of it.
Yeah. All right, well, I'm thinking maybe we should wrap this thing up. Do you have any things you want to touch on before we call it a day? I mean, we've kind of gone over the top five. We've gone over, there's some guys that have mechanicals, injuries. Like Seb said, he thinks, you know, things are going to kind of taper down a little bit here. Now the first round's in the bag. You know, the second one, I think, things will be a little bit quieter on the internet. It'll just be, you know.
I hope not. I hope everybody's more fired up for the second one.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, you know, in terms is you know, now that the first Enduro has happened, not in terms of, like, the racing and everything else. I mean, I think that's it's cool, you know, looking online the last few weeks, it's like, you know, it was a countdown clock pretty much, you know, it's coming.
No, there racing. Was one.
Oh.
On the Super Enduro website, countdown clock.
I must have missed that.
That's why I was looking at it every 4 hours just to see.
We're that much closer. It's coming. It's going to be here. But anything else you want to add to today, or anything else you want to talk about? I mean, I know we didn't really do a proper introduction of you at the start, but I mean, I don't really think you need much of an introduction. You're all over the internet. You're in product videos and everything else. So I think everybody knows who you are.
Well, maybe, but like, I don't think a lot of people know that I come from, you know, World Cup support background, so yeah. I have a relationship with most of these athletes, especially those old downhillers we were talking about.
Who is your favorite athlete, actually? Who's the most favorite person you've ever worked with?
You know, my relationship with Petey is pretty special because, like, he and I worked really closely together when he, you know, won those World Cup titles.
Yeah.
He was pitting out of the RockShox truck.
Yeah.
At that time, and so, and staying with us oftentimes, and so, you know, I got a real special bond with him, and so, probably PD just because, you know, the relationship, everything we went through together, but obviously, you know, I have a great relationship with a lot of those athletes, and that was the biggest part about, you know, my product development job is moving away from traveling with all my friends out there, and so, really getting to know the athletes and being able to help them out. So kind of miss that aspect.
Yeah. I mean, it's cool that, you know, like those are relationships you'll have with you forever, right? You know, nobody can take away those memories and what you've witnessed and been a part of and to see firsthand. I mean, anybody who's ever been in a World Cup, it's something truly special, I think, you know, especially with Petey. He's the most loved man within downhill, you know?
Yeah, and it's like, you know, I don't want to take anything away from all those other relationships that I've created over the years because, you know, I got a chance I ran into Petey and Minar out for a ride at Sea Otter, and so I got to ride with them for like 20 minutes and catch up, and, you know, because they're no longer SRAM-sponsored athletes, I don't have as much interaction with them as I used to, so it was really good to catch up with the both of them, and you know, hear about how Petey's family's doing because I haven't seen them in a bit, and then, you know, Minar just purchased a bike shop and talking about that. And so it's just kind of good to catch up with some of our older athletes that have been around for a while. You know, I didn't work with Nico much during his career. Here and there we had some interaction, but now that he's at LaPierre, I work with him very regularly. And so that's been really fun for me to work with those athletes, and then you know, now with Nico doing product development stuff, I actually go riding with him, or I start rides with him.
You start the trailhead with him, and you see him halfway down or at the bottom where he's decided to pull over.
Exactly, where he has a question or needs to borrow my shock pump or something.
Fair enough. I mean, it's truly mind blowing how quick those guys are. You know, but
this last year we went and did the Passports event in Port de Soleil, and so that's like a 60-80K loop with like 12 lifts or something, and little crew of the SRAMies, we went out, and then Nico joined us, and so we were riding all day with him, and it's just like getting your mind blown constantly. It's ridiculous, and it just such a pleasure to watch just his unique style, like just so smooth, watching him where he can generate speed, and you know, the French are just such such a BMX influence on their riding style.
Yeah.
Versus, like, if you look at other nationalities and the kind of influence there, the French are very fun, a lot of manual kind of pumping kind of things.
Yeah.
Very light traditionally.
Yeah, just generating their speed through the terrain rather than throwing in a ton of pedal strokes. They're just, you know, a little flick here, pop down there, manual through that ditch, and they read the terrain. That was the one thing I got out of riding with JC last year, is they just read the terrain at a level that I'm like, I don't even know how he generated speed out of that. That's not even a tranny, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it's just, boom, he's pulling speed and he's not putting in a pedal stroke.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, for sure.
But, anything else you want to add? Or?
Well, I definitely want to congratulate, Chris and Enrico and Fred on putting together a great event for the first Enduro World Series, and looking forward to the internet becoming ablaze again in a few weeks when we have the next round.
Yeah, exactly. And the next round happening a little later on, that being June 29th and 30th. And but between now and then, we've got our the World Cup downhill kickoff at Fort William. So
very excited about that.
Very, very. I know the downhill guys probably felt a little left out this off season. Everybody wanted to talk about enduro and downhill kind of was put to the side of the shelf there. But we'll be doing another pre-race show. We'll be doing that right before Fort William, and some big things lined up with that. Unfortunately, we had some guests that were supposed to come on today, just due to time zones and travel plans, we weren't able to make it happen. But next show, we definitely promise to be good. And Jeremiah, thanks for taking your time coming
in. No problem.
We know you're up here riding the bike park, having a little fun weekend off. You're not on a work trip for once. You're not testing anything. So
yeah. So time to go get some laps in because it looks like it's good.
Yeah, time to look like it's good. So I just want to thank everybody for listening today. Again, this is the Off Track podcast presented by BikeMag.com. And, we didn't do the introduction at the start, but you can stay up to date with us at our Twitter account, off_track MTB. There you can ask any questions, stay up to date with what's going on show-wise, who our guests are going to be, and when the shows will be available online. You also can follow us on Instagram. We've got our man Sven Martin on the ground. He's doing updates on a regular basis from each and every round and while he's traveling around. He probably has one of the most unique relationships with every athlete. He knows everybody in the paddock. He knows their story. So some good stuff there. So follow that at off_track. And the updates will be happening there. And if you have any questions or feedback about the show, please hit us up at tristan.merrick@gmail.com. That or Twitter. Any feedback would be good. Again, this is only our second show. We've got about 16 works for this season. So thanks for taking the time to listen, Jeremiah. Thanks for joining us in the studio today. And we'll get you back out into the bike park and pound some laps.
All right.
Thanks, guys, and have a great day.